Sometimes I'm making that time for it. Some cases it's almost a chore. But our next guest says it doesn't have to be like that. He's ready to put us on the path to becoming better and slower readers.
Joining us now is David Mikics, professor of English at the University of Houston, and he's the author of the new book, Slow Reading in a Hurried Age. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, you write that reading better means reading slowly. Why is that?
Well, I think that we're so bombarded these days. We're so surrounded by quick links on the internet. We always want to be up to date. We want to be up to the minute with everything. We're always responding to tweets or to instant messages. And all of this environment, we have to shut down at least for a while and sort of sink into a book. We really have to understand what reading is, that reading properly done, seriously done, is something that takes time. You really have to think of it as a refuge, as a deep pleasure, and as an escape from this, this environment that we're so busy with nowadays. And that I really present reading as an alternative to some of these electronic woes that we feel so much these days.
We've seen a lot of evidence, some of it anecdotal, that people are having a harder time sitting down with a book and reading something that's long form. If it's in these little tiny bite-sized chunks, then it's not so hard. But when you want to sit down and read Proust or something, your mind has other ideas and it can be hard to rein it in and get it to focus. And a lot of people blame this on the internet, just the nature of the way that we are reading things now, from tweets to, quick stories on weblogs. What do you make of that? Do you buy that? Is the internet making us bad readers?
I wouldn't say that it's making us bad readers, but it's presenting us with temptations all the time to go where we want to act on whim. If we're bored with something, we just click and go someplace new. And yeah, I mean, I found this in my own case too. It's harder to buckle down to a long novel, to a Proust or to a Pynchon or a George Eliot. When you're surrounded by all these distractions, because what the internet does is offer you these distractions all the time. And I see this in my students, too. I think that, there are just so many temptations all around. So what I try to do in this book is to sort of sit down with the reader and guide her or him through the process of really being absorbed by a book. It's something that we've all experienced often in childhood or in college and youth, where we had that sort of head over heels experience when, we fell in love with a book and we were sunk into that book and wanted to go back to it over and over again. But my point is that we can still have that experience. We're always ready for it. And so the book itself, it gives a series of rules for reading, but also tours of some of my favorite books and practical advice about how to read.
Do you think we're at the point in, our history with the internet and all of that right now where we actually do kind of need to be retaught how to read mindfully and carefully and slowly?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that, that when we sit down and, we start a long novel, perhaps we're having a little bit of trouble initially getting into it. It doesn't have to be a novel. It can be anything, nonfiction work or poetry. We find ourselves maybe itching for the iPhone. We want to check Facebook or another social media site. So what we really need to do is establish that sort of private space that consists just of ourselves and the author and the author's characters. And, realize that a book is an entire world. What you're being offered here is a world that you have to dwell in for a little while. You have to give it time to take you over. And those worlds are so different. I mean, the world of Dostoevsky, so different from Tolstoy or from Flannery O'Connor, from Chekhov, whatever, from Jane Austen. So as I lead the reader through some of these great writers, and there are dozens of them that I talk about in the book, I try to bring out those qualities of the worlds they're trying to introduce you to. But yeah, you have to be ready for it, and you have to prepare. You have to coax yourself away from all the distractions that surround us.
Well, in your book, you lay out 14 rules that you think will make us better readers. And I wonder if you could start with one. What is the most important rule, do you think?
Well, the rule I start with, my rule number one, is be patient. And this is something that, you know, we all have to learn how to do over and over. But what I mean by be patient is to give the book a chance to work on you. And there have been many cases where I've started a book two or even three times and, you know, sort of put it down and thought, oh, I'm just not in the mood. That's, you know, this is not right for me. It's too difficult. And then I've come back to it and I've loved it. So, you know, you have to be ready to try again. That's part of being patient. You have to get into the flow of a book and, you know, you have to obviously figure out what's going on to keep up with it, but also, you know, not worry too much if you feel that you're not getting the whole point. You know, if it's a difficult book like Joyce's Ulysses, you know, you'll really stymie yourself if you just try to look up everything and try to know everything. So it's a way of, and as you mentioned, Proust, you know, in Proust, this requires an enormous amount of patience, but there are enormous rewards and enormous pleasures, too. You really have to get used to a slower rhythm.
And another thing you say is look up the words that you don't know. That mm-hmm. seems, you know, I have read, you know, books where there's a lot of words. Sometimes I start by looking them up, and then there's another one. I think, oh, not another one, and then I just pass on the next few. But you say we should probably get out the dictionary and look this stuff up.
Yeah, well, the dictionary is an adventure in itself. You know, a good dictionary like the American Heritage, or even better, the Oxford English Dictionary, and you know, it will tell you sort of the fantastic histories of words and, you know, their meanings over time. The Oxford English Dictionary will do that. So it's really worth taking that excursion. But I'm with you in the sense that, you know, I'm not saying that people should do this every minute, but you know, you should do it often enough that you feel like you're you can establish a kind of back and forth. Of course, it depends on the book. Some books you won't need to use the dictionary at all or very little. But for ones that you do, you have to get used to looking at it at least occasionally.
And even you, a venerated English professor, has to look up words?
Oh, yes, all the time. And, you know, well, this is the danger of false pride, you know, that, you know, if I think I know something, I mean, we don't know that. I mean, the history of words is just so rich and so fabulous. There's just so much to know that, as I said, when you start looking into a dictionary, your appreciation for this wonderful English language and what writers can do with it is just increased immensely.
Well, we're talking right now with David Mikics about his new book, Slow Reading in a Hurried Age, and we'll pick up again with that conversation in a moment. But first...
Well, but first, it's time to remind you, it's our fall membership drive. Rob Ferret here with Laurie Skelton. Listeners provide the single largest source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is our fall membership drive, meaning it's your chance to support the programs you count on. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, last hour, we heard from 11 new and sustaining members, so thank you so much for the pledges that have come in. Right now, we're jacking things up a little bit. A dollar-for-dollar match this hour, up to $4,800, an extremely generous match from a group of generous donors from Madison and Wisconsin Rapids. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So you get your pledge doubled right now. It's a great opportunity at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. It's a great opportunity. Very generous current members who say, hey, join us, help Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, in just 1 month, there are seriously hundreds of discussions here on the Ideas Network. When you support WPR with your pledge, you're essentially making all of those conversations possible. Take a simple but really important step right now and give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Okay, you're talking about learning again how to read.
Yeah.
The lovely thing about making a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio is that you don't need any lessons. There's no training. It is so easy to make a pledge to WPR. It just takes a few minutes of your time and that gift of any amount. And I guess the hardest thing is to decide what is the amount. Let's say $10 a month to start.
It's a great amount to give. Well, you get to pick the amount, and however much you give, that contribution, that donation comes back to you every day in the form of great programs. Make your contribution at WPR.org, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Give as generously as you can.
Now when we travel, I've got WPR's app for the iPhone. We listen to WPR all the time. We're driving 14, 15 hours a day sometimes all across the country. This station has by far the best programming of any public radio station I've found anywhere in the country. This is prime programming. People should know that. People should be aware of it. People should know that there's something really intelligent happening right here in our midst. When we gave annually, you got a good feeling when you wrote the check. Now, as a sustainer, I'm reminded monthly. It does make you feel a bit more a part of the process, more a part of the entire effort to put intelligent programming on the air. We like the idea that we're putting our money where our values are. I'm Bruce from Brookfield, Wisconsin. Join me as a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks to Bruce for his contribution and for sharing his story. Now, how about you? Make your pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Rob Ferret here with Lori Skelton, reminding you that you provide the single largest source for funding for Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution and your neighbor's contribution and the person across the street in the next town over, you add it all up. It's the single largest source of funding here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What's combining right now is your pledge and your neighbor's pledge and the dollar-for-dollar match from a group of generous donors from Wisconsin, Rapids, and Madison. So right now, your gift of $50 turns into $100. $100 turns into $200. Talk about combining. This is really amazing. So please take advantage of this dollar-for-dollar match. It makes your pledge go even farther in paying for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. Get your pledge matched dollar-for-dollar right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Don't want to leave any of that on the table, that's for sure. Well, you can turn on the radio every day, and it's free from one perspective. It doesn't cost you anything to flip that dial. You can enjoy the news, the conversations, the entertainment for hours on end. For a lot of people, that's where the relationship ends.
But for that group of generous donors, and probably for you, there is a changing relationship. You don't just want to passively listen. You want to actively support Wisconsin Public Radio. A dollar-for-dollar match right now from people who have already made a contribution, they're saying, we're going to give a little more in hopes that you'll give a little more, willingly paying for something that many people get for free.
You can go from a listener to being a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Become a member today. $5 a month, maybe $10 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferris.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're continuing our conversation now about the art of slow reading with David Mikix. His book is called Slow Reading in a Hurried Age. And we want to hear from you, too, if you've had this experience about really just sinking into a book, losing yourself in another world. What advice do you have for people about how to kind of slow down enough to really get the most out of a book, to really absorb it and feel like you're doing the book justice and getting the maximum amount of enjoyment out of it that you can? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we were talking, David, about patience. What's another one of your cardinal rules here?
Well, another of my cardinal rules is to think about the structure of what you're reading. And this may sound a little dull at first, you know, and the point of my book is for everyone to be much more energized about their reading, more passionate about their reading. But I think part of that, too, is slowing down and noticing details, details like how something begins and ends, or when things happen in a book. I take, for example, a Chekhov short story, Gooseberries. And, you know, Chekhov's work is just so sort of mysterious and wonderful and elusive. It seems so casual. And yet you really can sort of slow down and map it out and see why things happen in the way they do, you know, in a particular sequence. Even a short story that seems so casual, so wandering, and so sort of intuitive has a fascinating structure. And, you know, so those are, that's one of the things I emphasize, something like in Anna Karenina, for example, when the thought of suicide first comes to Anna Karenina, it's a sort of whim. It comes very late in the book, and it would have been so different, immensely different, had Tolstoy decided to introduce that thought early on, you know, had she been thinking about it, you know, since the beginning. So the way writers make their choices, the way they structure things, again, you're in there with the writer and you're trying to figure out why the writer is doing what she's doing or he's doing, you know, and why that matters.
But if I'm reading a book that's really got that forward momentum and it's pulling me along, I'm flipping the pages as fast as I can, isn't it hard to stop and think about structure when you just you get carried away by the plot?
Oh, sure. I mean, and again, the first rule of advice is, you know, not just to be patient, but really to yield yourself to the experience, right? You're committing yourself, you're having a relationship with the author, and you're letting the author lead you to new places. And, you know, I don't want to put the brakes on that and say, oh, you know, think dissect it or think of it analytically. But, you know, after you've finished, and this is another one of my pieces of advice, after you've finished a book, you know, look back to it and, you know, pick it up again. And, you know, you can think more carefully about, you know, or a little bit more systematically. Again, that seems like a dull word. But I think it really enhances your enjoyment to sort of think about how things work in a book. And, you know, I encourage readers to do that. I mean, readers, for example, who say, well, I love poetry, but I don't really understand poems. I don't really know, you know, much about how they work or how they achieve effects. I give a lot of particular examples about that and sort of lead readers through, you know, some terrific poems that, and you'll have more of a sense when you read my analysis of how things work. So I think that is, it does increase enjoyment. It does increase pleasure.
What is a book that you've read that you've really sort of applied all of these things to that you feel like it really made it more pleasurable for you to read when you could have, you know, kind of slammed it down foie gras style and that was that, but you slowed down and that made it worth it?
Uh-huh. Well, that's a wonderful example. I'll take something that I teach a lot. I teach often a Shakespeare course, and so, you know, I've just finished teaching Hamlet. And, you know, I mean, Hamlet is just such an overwhelming experience, reading it or seeing it. This is the most charismatic character, the most celebrated character in Western literary history. There's been more written about Hamlet than any other book in English except for the Bible in English. So, you know, your first impression of the book is you're overwhelmed by, you know, by Hamlet's charisma. But then, you know, when you slow down and you let the play work on you, you take it step by step, you know, you return to parts of it that particularly fascinate you, you know, you notice a structure to things. You start to wonder, well, why does the to be or not to be speech show up exactly where it does? This is a famous mystery of the play. Why does Hamlet take so long plotting his revenge? Why doesn't he just, you know, get the job done? This is another, you know, another famous question.
And he kind of drives you crazy when you read it slowly. You're like, do something already.
It's true. Yes. Yeah. It is a form of torture, but it's a delightful form of torture. I mean, one of the best, one of the most exciting experiences in literature one could have is Shakespeare's Hamlet. And so, you know, when I lead my students, for example, through that book, or when I read it, you know, for my own pleasure, you know, I really try to sort of have a complete view as possible. Hamlet himself seems to take over our imaginations, but there are other characters in the work who are gripping, who are just thrilling and fascinating presences, King Claudius, Gertrude. And so we think about how these characters balance one another. So, you know, this is to bring these things out and to, you know, to think about them. This always, I think, increases the amount of fun and the amount of profit we can get from literature.
You also talk about being suspicious of the characters as you read, not to take everything at face value. And we have a lot of Game of Thrones fans on this show, and, you know, it pays to be suspicious when you're reading that series. But what do we get out of it as a reader?
Yes. Well, I don't know Game of Thrones yet, at least. I, I, I can't comment on that. But, you know, what do we get out of being suspicious? Well, let's take the case of Hamlet again, to go back to that. I mean, he immediately has us on his side, but he is also, you know, he's a complete klutz, a failure as an avenger. He's ruthless to everyone. He torments Ophelia and drives her to her death. He's responsible for the deaths of 8 or perhaps 9 people, depending on how you count. And so, you know, when we think about that, you know, we start to wonder about our own reactions to characters. You know, to be suspicious means to think, well, is there another point of view on this character? And, you know, again, to mention Anna Karenina, you can see her either as a selfish narcissist or as a wonderful self-empowered heroine, you know, who is crushed by fate. And, you know, certain readers are drawn in either of those directions, you know, depends on who you are. But you'll discover things about yourself when you think about your reaction to a character, you know, and you'll think about why you're identifying or what you're identifying with. So, you know, it's a very complex drama, a very rich drama going on between you and the hero or the heroine in a work of literature.
David, we've only got about 30 seconds left, but what do you think we lose when we don't slow down and really absorb a book the way you're talking about?
Well, the main thing that we lose is, again, just pleasure as well as instruction, and instruction is a form of pleasure. They're forms of one another. Too often nowadays we read for information, and, you know, we just want to get the gist of something. We want to get the broad strokes, especially in the Internet age. This is true. But what we're losing is an ability to feel the whole range of experience, you know, the full range of the world. We'll meet more people in books than we can ever meet in real life. And the world that the great authors have created is something that really rivals the real world. So it's one of the best experiences you can have to subject yourself to it, to feel to it.
Well, David, thank you so much for being on with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. My pleasure.
We've been talking to David Mikic, a professor of English at the University of Houston and the author of Slow Reading in a Hurried Age.
Quick reminder that you can pledge your support to Wisconsin Public Radio at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Stick around. More to come here on Central Time.
This is Central Time, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. I'm Veronica Rickert, sitting here with Lori Skelton. As a Wisconsin Public Radio listener, you know you're always going to hear something that's worthwhile when you tune in. And now is the time for you to think about that and then try to put a dollar sign on that. What's that worth to you? Your gift is vital to Wisconsin Public Radio, and it's a really big part of what keeps us going. Support this program and everything else you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio by making a gift in any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This hour, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $4,800, which means right now we've got about $2,000 to go, maybe a little less than $2,000 that can still be matched dollar-for-dollar. For every dollar you give, a group of generous donors from Madison and the Wisconsin Rapids will donate an additional dollar. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. You can double the impact of your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I want us all to just pause for a moment and think about how cool it is that a group of listeners would decide to throw extra money onto the table because they love Wisconsin Public Radio so much, they value it so much, that they just want to help you decide to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. They're kicking in extra money to convince you to pledge. That's how much they care.
Think of it as a green carrot. You know, we're dangling this out in front of you, but it's not an orange carrot.
I see where you're going with this.
It's a green carrot.
I see. Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of a money carrot, if you'd say that.
Except one doesn't want to think about nibbling on one's dollar bills now, does one?
Except it's a great way to think about it. That's how much they care, and they're passionate about Wisconsin Public Radio. Share their passion. You're listening now. You're listening during a pledge drive. Why not say you went out on a limb to support Wisconsin Public Radio like this? and this extra gift, and so will I. I'm going to stand up there and support you and make my pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. We have $2,000 left to go on this matching gift, and you can join them at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As a public radio listener, you're smart, and that means you want to know also what else is going on. You want to add to the store of knowledge, not only the news, but the culture that's around us. It's not just about the hard facts. It's about the art. It's about the entertainment. It's about the garden. It's about the environment. So many different things that come together on this particular show. We're right here with you, learning along with you, exploring all of the angles. We're asking that you be with us in your support of Wisconsin Public Radio to make all the stories you hear on Central Time, the hard news, the fun facts possible. Give now, because it makes a big difference, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you're interested in playing a larger role in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, the 9XM Leadership Circle is a group of listeners who contribute $1,200 or more a year to support Wisconsin Public Radio programs.
We have the Leadership Circle members valuing compelling public radio programming so that everyone can enjoy it. If you have the opportunity to pledge not only for yourself, but for others who can't afford to make that gift right now, if you'd like to increase the gift you've already made or start off brand new, make that gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And after you make that pledge today, you will find, we think, that you will feel pretty darn good every time you turn on the radio. We've actually talked to people about this. There have been surveys done about how people feel after they pledge, and they say that they feel good about it. In fact, most of them go on and become regular contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio. Because it does feel that good.
It does feel that good. We feel good knowing that Wisconsin Public Radio is listener supported. It's your pledge that not only guarantees our future, it guarantees your future listening. So make yourself feel so good right now. Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And then, of course, every time you turn on the radio, you'll feel good all over again.
Now, don't forget, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from a group of generous donors from Madison and Wisconsin Rapids. And because of them, your gift of $50 turns to $100, $100 turns into $200, and on it goes like that. We need to take advantage of that generous match, and you can make your gift go even further in paying for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. Get your pledge matched right now, dollar for dollar, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life is enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the hosts and the guests both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support during this fall membership drive. Veronica Rickert here with Lori Skelton, and we're asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. So thank you in advance for your gift of maybe $10, maybe $15, whatever amount is the right amount, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We now have a little less than $1,000 still to be matched on this dollar-for-dollar match. The original match was $4,800 from generous donors in Madison and Wisconsin Rapids. A little less than $1,000 now. Won't you take advantage of it? Make your pledge go twice as far. Just get things started at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This is a great hour to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio because of this dollar-for-dollar match. So you can help us take that money that has been so generously offered to encourage you to pledge and see how you feel about it. We think you'll feel pretty good, and we're so grateful for the support that you give us and that you're listening. You can make your pledge at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And thank you so much.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up later in the program, we'll be talking with Bill Ayers, who's been called a public enemy and a domestic terrorist in the past. We'll talk with him about his life after his involvement in the Weather Underground.
First, the debate continues over a proposed casino in Kenosha. The Menominee tribe is currently seeking approval to build the facility. They've encountered opposition from other tribes, Milwaukee politicians, other people concerned about an oversaturation of Wisconsin's casino market.
But our next guest says that while a new casino would be a risk in a tight market, the jobs and competition it would create would ultimately be good for the region.
James Causey joins us now. He's an editorial writer, columnist, and blogger for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We've got a link to his latest op-ed, Kenosha Casino is a Good Bet, on the Central Time Facebook page. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So you went over to the existing casino, the Pottawatomie Casino in Milwaukee, and talked to some of the people who gamble there. What did you hear from them about this idea?
Well, I talked to roughly 20 people, and it was a steady stream of folks coming in and leaving the casino. And everyone that I talked to said that they would welcome the competition and that they would attend the new casino if it was to open. There was only one person that was a little hesitant about a new casino, and his only reason is because he wouldn't have the transportation to get there. Mm-hmm. But other than that, everybody else was all for it.
So job creation has been one of the big selling points for supporters of the new casino. What is the case as far as the kinds of jobs that would be created?
Well, I mean, we're talking the new casino, the proposed casino, is promising jobs that would pay up to upwards of $47,000 a year. And we're talking more than 2,000 jobs that would pay that, 2,000 or 3,000 jobs. Now, all those jobs won't be filled by people that live in Kenosha. Some of those jobs will be filled by people who live right here in in Milwaukee. And I think that they would easily try to find a way to get there, especially if they're underemployed or unemployed here in Milwaukee. There's a lot of people out of work in both Milwaukee and Kenosha, and those jobs are needed. I don't see anyone else or any other organization creating thousands of jobs right now, not in Milwaukee and Kenosha. So you have this opportunity right now to do that, and that's good for the region because it'll put people to work. Now, I understand our mayor's take on it, Mayor Barrett, who says that, you know, this would potentially hurt Pottawatomie, but you have to think bigger than Milwaukee when it comes to something like this. You have to think what benefits the region. And I would take a loss of a few hundred jobs here if we could create a few thousand jobs for the, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 jobs for the region that pay $47,000 a year. And I think that's what we should be looking at.
Part of the argument, though, is that, maybe we're getting close to a saturation point with casinos in the state. Every bit of success in a new casino is maybe taking away from the existing one, so you're not really seeing a net gain in the region as a whole.
Well, Pottawatomie made $400 million off of gamblers last year, and it was a steady stream. Nonstop stream of people going in. Gamblers will gamble, and they will go wherever they think they can win. And if Pottawatomie took in about $400 million, I think there's a lot of money out there to be had. And, you know, this is what other people were even telling me this. Some of the gamblers were saying, you know, Pottawatomie is a little tight on their slots. Maybe if they had competition, it would increase the chances of them winning here locally. They think that they will loosen up the slots a bit. So I think it goes both ways. I think gamblers will gamble, and if a new casino were to open, yeah, Pottawatomie will lose some money, but that's where competition comes in. You have to find creative ways to keep people coming to you. So if that means loosening up the slots, then maybe you need to do that. If that means coming up with creative ways to get more people to come stay with you, you know, then you need to come up with better ways to do that. If you look at other places like Vegas, they have a lot of competition out there, but each casino, you know, is competing hard for that dollar, and they find different ways to do it. If it's anything from offering you a free hotel stay or offering you a free meal, they do whatever they take to get you in there to gamble. So that's what Pottawatomie will probably need to do.
Another source of opposition here is people who are opposed to casinos in general, not wanting yet another one, saying, hey, this is taking advantage of people, in some cases compulsive gamblers. What do you say to that argument, that that we don't need a new casino for that reason.
I mean that argument is, I don't buy much into that, because people will gamble anyway. If you look at some of the people at Pottawatomie, quite frankly, it looked like some of them didn't have the money to lose. I don't gamble, and I said that in my column because I can't afford to lose anything. But I was looking at a lot of these people coming in, and I was thinking to myself, man, do you really have the money to lose? But gambling is part of the gamble. You win some, you lose some, and I think people tend to hope and pray that they could come up and win. And then, there's going to always be ways that people gamble. If you don't build a new casino, if we don't build one in Kenosha, guess what? They're going to build one right across the border in Illinois anyway. So those people will go there anyway, and that will be money that we will be losing to Illinois. So I'd rather that the casino be built here and the jobs be built here, come right here in Wisconsin.
Now, Governor Walker has a deadline coming up. He says he'll go forward with the plan only if, this is one of the conditions, all 11 state tribes give unanimous approval. Owners of existing casinos, especially that Pottawatomie Casino in Milwaukee, don't seem likely to sign on to this. Is this all a moot conversation? Is this not going to happen?
Well, like I said in my column, I believe that, this is a cop-out on the governor's part. For him to say that all 11 tribes need to sign off on it, that pretty much takes him out of the equation. He doesn't have to make a decision. And I think this is something where he needs to make a decision on. He says he's open for business. Okay. If you're open for business, that means you need to be open for competition as well. And you can't have it both ways. You can't say you're open for business and you're trying to create jobs. But at the same time, when someone faces competition, then you say, well, I want everybody to agree on this. We wouldn't do this if this was a fast food restaurant moving in down the street. You wouldn't let, if Burger King wanted to open up across the street from McDonald's, McDonald's wouldn't have to agree along with Taco Bell and KFC to approve that. You have competition. Competition keeps the prices down. Competition also forces you to compete.
Well, we're watching this from outside of the southeastern Wisconsin area, and still a lot of people are interested in it. Is this something that people are talking about a lot in Milwaukee as it gets closer?
Yeah, I mean, gamblers talk about it a lot more.
Well, yeah.
it involves them, and they're always looking for the winning hand. I think for people like me who tend not to gamble, and I don't know many gamblers in my family, it doesn't really mean a whole lot. The only thing that I care about is jobs. We have to find a way to get people to work. And right now, I don't see anyone else in southeastern Wisconsin creating thousands of jobs that pay livable wages. I mean, there's a lot of fast food jobs. There's a lot of hotel jobs. But those jobs are not the jobs that you could put food on your table and take care of your family with. And we need to come up with ways, thinking outside the box to create those kind of jobs. And if you want to knock these jobs, if you say no to the casino, well, then I want to see a plan in place to create 3,000 jobs for the region that pays $47,000 a year. And if I hear something like that, then I'll be all for it. But right now I'm not hearing that. I'm just hearing no.
Outside of casinos, I mean, maybe just wishful thinking. Is there something you would hope would create jobs in that area in Milwaukee and Kenosha and southeastern Wisconsin? Pipe dream here?
Pipe dream. Well, I would love to see welding jobs come back and get people to work to have men, especially men of color. To get them my opportunity to earn a living and take care of their families. Right now, when I drive into work, I live in the central city. When I drive into work every day and when I go home at night, I see too many men of color who are not working. You see them sitting on their porches. You see them not going to work or not even looking like they're about to go to work. And if these men are not working, that means these men are not taking care of their families, they're not taking care of their children, and they barely are taking care of themselves. And we have to find a way to get these men to work. And it's not happening here, and it's only getting worse. And will you have 40% of your children, minority children in this city, living in poverty? Then we have to come up with ways to get these men to work so they could take care of their kids. And if you want to knock jobs saying that this is going to hurt Pottawatomie, okay, say it hurts. Say Pottawatomie loses like 400 or 500 jobs, but you create 3,000 jobs that pay a lot more and that are union jobs and that pay a livable wage, then I'd rather go for that because there are too many people out of work. I mean, I don't know how to stress that enough. So,
all right, James, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Call me anytime.
That's James Causey. He's an editorial writer, columnist, and blogger from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His piece on the Kenosha Casino is linked on our Facebook page. This is an issue we'll keep watching in the future.
Coming up, Bill Ayers joins the show to talk about his new memoir. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Rob Verrett here with Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time, and it's Wisconsin Public Radio's fall membership drive. We're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support your future WPR listening. Make a contribution of any amount. You pick the amount that's right for you and go online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And it has been a pretty exciting hour so far because we've had a dollar-for-dollar match from a group of listeners in Madison and Wisconsin Rapids up to $4,800. And we've got a little bit less than 300 of that left. So we're getting close to that, but we want to make sure to take advantage of that generous offer. You can double the impact of your pledge right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, one of the best compliments I've heard for our show was somebody told me it was like you're sitting in a coffee shop and listening in to like a really interesting conversation and you don't want to get up and leave because there's such interesting stuff going on. And I took that really well. I think that's a great way to think of the show. We try to bring on guests who are enjoyable to listen to, informative, and have topics that just really stimulate your curiosity.
And someone has got to pay for that conversation.
Oh, yeah, right.
And that cup of coffee. Well, you make this daily cup of coffee on the Ideas Network possible with your financial support. Won't you give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552? Still almost $300 left of that matching dollar-for-dollar offer.
If you've never pledged before, it doesn't hurt. It takes just a few minutes of your time. You just give us your name, your personal info, or your contact info, I should say, how much you want to give, and how much you'd like to pay. I was going to say, we don't share that personal info with anyone else. No matter how much you choose to give, use the next few minutes to make a pledge now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
This is Michelle Norris from NPR News. It's fundraising time. We've worn you down. You finally decided to give, but you're still undecided about how much to give. Well, here's a suggestion. Think about becoming a sustaining giver at just $10 a month. It's billed to your credit card, it renews automatically, and you can stop anytime you want. Then, no matter when you tune into your station, you know that you're doing your part. And no matter when a fund drive comes around, you can listen guilt-free. Join as a sustaining supporter of your station today. Just $10 a month. Here's how.
You can make that contribution at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Central Time here. Veronica Rickert, Rob Ferret. It is our fall membership drive. Whether your pledge is $5 a month or $100 a month, anywhere above, below, or in between, we appreciate it. We count on it. Make it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Rob, we have some super cool news now. Remember that dollar-for-dollar match that we had up to $4,800?
I do.
Ring a bell?
I do.
Well, we made that.
Yes, that is awesome.
We used every bit of that, and thank you to you for stepping up and supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. And we still have a ground to cover for this pledge drive. You can keep the momentum going, the good feelings that we have here, the support, and the reciprocity. Why don't you give your donation now and join the fun at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we really do have momentum going now. Don't want to lose it. We've had 50 people pledge this hour, and that's great, and it's exciting. 25 people this hour made their first ever contribution. That's one of the things that makes me the happiest, when people turn from listeners into members for the first time. Now, how about you? Have you 27 new pledges now? Thank you. Make your pledge now. Maybe your first ever at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Do you know we actually heard from a listener who said he wasn't sleeping at night out of guilt for not donating when he listened to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Aww.
Well, don't let that happen to you. We don't want you to lose sleep, but we would love it if you decided to make a donation to support Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's not a guilt thing, man. It's a positive thing. It's a happy thing. It's not that you should feel bad if you can't afford to pledge. Of course not. But it's that you can feel great if you have pledged, because every time you listen, you can say to yourself, what's that logo after Lost? I made this. Your pledge helped make radio possible, helped make Wisconsin Public Radio possible. You're a part of it when you pledge. Make that contribution right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We know those listeners are feeling good. They've made those first pledges ever. We know Rob is feeling good because he's peppering the word man liberally
in his
pledge pitches. So why don't you join us, man? You can give now at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
Abigail from Madison made a pledge this hour. She says, I grew up listening to public radio with my parents, and whenever I have the chance to listen now, I have a wonderful sense of nostalgia. Thank you for listening, Abigail, and thank you for making that contribution. You can do the same at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you make your pledge, consider becoming a sustainer. Your sustaining membership automatically renews each year, and you'll pay your pledge in affordable monthly installments that will take a little bit less to think about because they just happen automatically. It's easy to set up, and it's a great way to make a lasting impact on Wisconsin Public Radio. You choose how to give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Keeps going up. 30 first-time pledgers this hour. That's fantastic. Can we get up to 35 or 40? You can help us. Make your first ever pledge or renew your pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much.